I'm just trying to find headphones.
Oh, okay.
Hello Kitty headphones. So Jan, do I need to, can you refresh me on what I need to do to facilitate this? And
so we need to call the meeting to order, and then you can ask Erica to call roll. Every planning commissioner should audibly acknowledge that they're present. And then it's my understanding we do have one public comment that was submitted. She will read that. And then you guys have an approval of some meeting minutes from June 10th. So you'll need to approve those. And then we'll go into those two action items, and then there's discussion items. Okay, so ideally, perfect. I think probably for everyone's sanity, we probably want to try to keep this to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. It gets pretty challenging when these Zoom meetings go much beyond that. But if you're still having a good policy discussion and everyone's willing to keep going, then, you know, we don't want to cut you short either.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay.
Can I ask a question real quick?
Yes.
Since I missed the June 10th one, I've watched all that stuff, but procedure wise, I can only see one screen at a time on my little tiny screen here. Are we just, Ross, are you going to call us out to talk about each thing as we go around? How are we doing that? How are we doing Robert's rule?
Yes, I think just if you raise your hand, I'll call on who, you know, just in order as we get into the discussion. And I would say, as far as timing goes, you know, if it gets, I know that we've had 2 minutes, but that's in regards to the public hearing. But I think tonight we're just having a discussion, and I'm not really in favor of trying to cut someone off. But just keep in mind that, you know, we would like to get a balanced discussion going. So with no further ado, I'd like
Ross. Yeah. Just real quick, your voice is really low and really soft. So I don't know if it's the headphones or your microphone.
Does this help?
That does help.
Okay. No headphones. Okay. I would like to call the meeting to order September 23rd. 2020. Erica, could you do roll call?
Yes. So if each commissioner, when named, indicate their presence, please. Ross Henry?
Present.
Seth Gilchrist?
Present.
Tom Stevenson?
Present.
Greg Hohensee?
Present.
And Michael Moynalt?
Present.
And staff, Jan Brending?
Present.
Bill Hunsaker?
He's probably muted.
I'm present.
And Erica Castro, present. And so moving on to the public comment. So there was one comment received, and it was received via email on Monday, September 21st by Mark Sanborn and Sandra Leonard. It reads, public comment to the Planning Commission. My wife and I reside within White Salmon city limits in a house we recently built on a lot zoned R2. When we bought the property, it was advertised next to an existing home also for sale, which originally owned our lot. The house was recently renovated to include an ADU, but it was still to be a private residence. We had no problem with that. The new owner would be our neighbor, and they could rent the ADU however they wanted. Instead, the owner pulled the house off the market and started renting out both the house and the ADU on Airbnb. It appears that they never intended to live at the house, opting instead to run it as a business in a residential neighborhood. This is not okay with us. We feel that the residential zoning implies a residential use. To that end, a residential use can be either a homeowner living on the property or a long-term renter living on the property. In our case, an R2 designation can include a homeowner and an ADU or a duplex where two long-term renters reside. But the key is reside. The homeowner with the ADU who resides at this address can rent their ADU any way they want because by living there, they fulfill the residential requirements of the zoning. I read both the Hood River and Leavenworth Code included in this packet and strongly support adopting something very close to what was implemented. Absentee homeowners of vacation renters within our neighborhood simply do not keep their properties up as well as most homeowners. Their clients do not treat our properties as well as their neighbors back home. Most have been very nice folks and are easy to deal with. However, some choose to cut across our yard simply for their convenience or park in front of their home, of our home because the rental has limited parking. These concerns are small compared to others in similar situations, but White Salmon has a right to adopt regulations to ensure the livability of neighborhoods and slow down the loss of housing stock for its residents. Thank you for your consideration, Mark Sanborn and Sandra Leonard. And then that was the only comment received, as I mentioned. So moving on to the approval of the minutes for June 10th, 2020.
We lost Ross.
I'm here. Does anybody, so trying to remember, need someone who was present to that meeting? It would either be Tom or Michael to approve the minutes.
Okay, I move that the minutes be approved as is.
Tom, you want to second that?
I second.
All right, minutes approved as written.
And then I'll get a in favor or not in favor as I read each of your names. Ross Henry.
Favor.
Seth Gilchrist.
In favor.
Tom Stevenson.
Favor.
Greg Cohensey.
Favor.
And Mike Ramonalt.
Favor.
Thank you. So carried 5-0.
So Ross, just to help with that in the future, basically you would say all those in favor say aye. And then each person would say aye. If they're opposed, then they would say, you know, then you say all those opposed, and then they vote nay or aye.
Okay.
I'll start the next agenda item. I think you've had the urbanization study. I think it got, you know, there were some questions about the Planning Commission adoption. I sent out an email to the Planning Commission. I took ownership of that error. And so it's now before you for final review and adoption. And I've got the plan here, it's a study. And I think that's important to remember that this is a tool. It is not the comprehensive plan. It doesn't set policies. It has some recommendations in it from our consultants. But the idea is this is one of the tools that you will use as you go through your comprehensive plan update. As you know, we're working on a transportation plan and a park plan, and those also will come in and get folded into the comprehensive plan update. So this is just a tool. It provides data that was collected, and it provides it in different formats, tables, and some narratives. But if you feel that there are language tweaks that you would like to have further done, I did contact our consultants, and they said if there were minor changes, they would not charge us to make those updates. And so now it is before you for final review and action.
I have some minor updates that I would like, or minor changes. that I think should be done. And
so go page by page, Tom.
Excuse me, I know I can tell you what page it's on.
Yes, that's what we need.
Okay, page 12. I think the area should be added to the city of White Salmon. And then that's at the top of the page.
So you're wanting a wording change?
Just an additional word. There was a lot of, they weren't keeping track of the city and the city, White Salmon City area, which are very different.
So on the page, top of page 12, Tom, it says, within the city of White Salmon, the number of households increased from approximately 763 to, you know, whatever. So I guess we need to know where specifically you're asking for a word to be inserted and what the word is.
Okay.
Yeah, I think page 12 of the PDF is a map, and I think it says page 1 of the study itself. So the PDF has a different page numbering scheme than the document.
You know, there's a first group of numbers, and then you get to I downloaded it straight off the file.
So is it on
anyway,
page?
I agree with Jan. I'm right along with her on that.
Oh, you are? Okay. I'm looking at something different then. I'm actually looking at page 1 following page 7.
Jan, so we should add area after city of White Salmon, I believe.
Within the city of White Salmon area?
I believe so. I made those recommendations before many times and there were changes done.
I think they mean the same. The city of White Salmon and the city of White Salmon area are two.
I think you should clarify it because there's talk about the city limits and there's talk about annexation. And there's talk about land development buildings within the area that aren't in the city.
This data here is within the city limits of White Salmon. It is not all of the homes in the urban exempt area.
Okay, you're sure of that. I want that verified because I'm not sure of that.
I will verify it.
Yes.
The way I read that, it's within the city of White Salmon.
Well, there was a lot of those that they changed.
Mm-hmm.
They did that a lot of times, and they changed it many times, and this is one I think they should look at, too. Also,
I will verify it, and if it includes the area outside of it, we will put area. What we'll do is we'll just say, instead of saying within the city of White Salmon area, we'll say within the White Salmon area.
Exactly.
But we'll make sure what that data refers to.
Yes, exactly. And then I think that the number 889 should be 1107. And if you look right down on exhibit 3.3, you can figure it out. What's the households in 2018?
You're correct.
When you look at the... Okay, and they put 889, that happens to be 2010.
Yeah, we'll correct that.
That's self-evident. Also, in exhibit 3.3, headline, header, same thing. It should be White Salmon area.
If that's correct.
Yes, but I believe it is, so I just think you should look at it.
We'll look at it.
Okay. And on page 35... last full paragraph, three sentences up from the bottom, diminish should be spelled with an ana in it also. IN.
So is this the paragraph that says during review?
Yes. Last word. In the paragraph.
Right, I got it. Thank you.
I also think that on in page 35, since we're here, in the second to last sentence, when they're talking about cottages, townhomes, plexes, this is the third line from the bottom, cottages, townhomes, plexes, and apartments, the city should consider rezonings discussed below. I think that they should be at least saying this is rezoning and annexing, or I think it would be better to just to change rezoning to annexing.
Well, I think, this again is just a recommendation. It's not a policy decision of the Planning Commission that would come out later. But I do think maybe, because it's speaking, within, it's speaking to a specific type of development.
About a lot of things. Jan, would you just ask them to look at that, please? Yeah. There's a lot of this is.
But we don't want to bring this back again. We don't want to bring it back again.
That's right. And you also want to cover yourself and mm-hmm. have a proper right point of view. And annexation is going to be probably a bigger tool to create medium level housing than rezoning.
Right, and again, possibly. Tom, that's most likely a policy decision that will come out of your comprehensive plan. But we can maybe add some verbiage in here to address annexation.
I think that verbiage should be placed in there so that it just makes it a better document from their standpoint. I think they want to do
we
it.
We will see what we can add about annexation.
Yes. Well, they're words. They're words. They can't be. It can't be hard to do.
Yeah, and, we can do that.
Okay, and this is probably something you can't answer, Jan, but on. I think in page 5,
where it talks about residential lands.
Yes.
Okay.
Midway through, right above the graph, says draft BLI findings and results.
Yes.
It says they were reviewed by county and city staff and refined accordingly based on input received. The draft had and public review. So I take it we're not doing public, they don't want to do the public review, they took it out.
Well, was it in there before?
Again, please ask them about that. That's all. I mean, I'm not really concerned too much about that, but at least it's different, and I wonder why. I mean, what do we want to do with this? How much input do you want? I don't know.
Again, this is not a policy document. It's a planning tool.
Okay, that might be a good answer for that.
But I can ask them about it.
Okay. And again, on that first page.
On page 5,
I was asking,
Bill?
I wanted them to, I thought maybe somebody was going to be here from their company, and I was going to ask a question.
We can
ask the first bullet
questions.
There, under residential land mm-hmm. base is organized as follows. It says very low density, i.e. rural large lot detached housing.
Yeah.
There is some, there's quite a bit of land in white salmon that's not developed, that's in that zone, and or in these other zones that we're going to get to. And they say that restrict development to land uses between 0.05 and 0.5 dwelling units per acre. Well, that means that they're 2-acre zone or a 20-acre zone.
And I think that's based sure on that the counties. That's based, I believe, on the county zoning in the urban exempt
yes,
area.
Yes, but I know some. But I think I know something about this, and I'd like them to see if I'm correct. I believe that the majority of these lands are zoned in 20,000 acre minimums. It's a half acre. I know this because I just know it. And then on then in your exhibit that's at the bottom of that page, exhibit 2.2, it has very low density residential, and it's checkmarked for RL and SR. And you're correct; those are old or they're existing county zoning designations. And this is property that's been picked up or annexed from the county, like any other county land that's going to come in. But the point is, the only point I'm making is that, number one, it shouldn't be considered low density residential because I think it's 20,000 square foot lots. That's two lots per acre, and half acre lot, similar to what we have in the city. That's R1 basically, and it shouldn't be either called for very low, and it shouldn't have that kind of a definition.
So Tom, I believe this
they
is
talk speaking. A lot. You know, they talk a lot about that. They
so
talk
Tom,
that. That's a driving force. Yes.
This is existing zoning. So this isn't a call out for what it could be. It's what the existing lands are zoned as. And so I think, it says the BLI has been, it's based on allowable density per the underlying zoning of each parcel. So that's the current zoning. It's not any future zoning or based on if it was annexed into the city, what it could be. It's existing zoning. But I will have them confirm
Jan, you didn't hear what I said. The way it's actually worked, that people work with it. You can get two lots per acre out there. That's the zone. In fact, the county, when the urban area was developed about 20 years ago or something like that, the county and the city talked, that's when we were on this planning commission together. We were looking at expanding, and they felt that they did have some larger lots, but they blanketed the zone to 20,000 acres. I think 20,000 square feet, excuse me. Mm-hmm. I think you can look at that and find that out. So I think there's no reason to say something that's wrong.
Okay, we will confirm what that zoning is. We will confirm what the zoning is with the county, and we will make sure that it's correct.
Thank you. Yeah, it's the only thing I'm talking about. I'm sorry if I'm taking too long. Page 35. Well, second to last. Oh, I think I talked about that. That's where I wanted an annexation added into.
Yeah, we got that.
I got that one already. Okay, yep. And page 36, I'm almost done. He talks about stakeholder input. And I also found out the stakeholder input that was done for this happened to be from people who were concerned about the lack of affordable housing and rental areas, okay, which is a worthy consideration. And I dealt with it the first time when I'm in my first group of comments. I think that the stakeholder, that the input for this study is not the same as the stakeholder input for our vision statement. And it maybe should have a little more, it already is. There's been changes in this and they've been adding village-like feel or historic neighborhoods. They've been talking about that, okay? But I think that we need to have a little more. In other words, I don't think you should just go in there because you think you need a bunch of R2 and change R1 drastically to create R2 and have the R2 go they shouldn't be trying to get that to happen.
Right.
And they aren't really, but there's still conversation in here that says that.
But this reflects the stakeholder input. This reflects the stakeholder input as it was provided. Again, this is a tool for you to use when you get to those policy decisions about rezoning or whatever else it is that you want to see in the comp plan. You'll have goals and policies related to land uses and housing. And this is just
okay.
A tool.
So fair
this
enough,
is,
fair enough.
This is
fair,
what was
that's fair enough.
Provided.
Because I'm gonna get to some specifics here a little bit more.
Well, your specifics probably should come in when you guys start talking under like short-term rentals or when you get to your housing policy.
Well, that's right, but I just think there's some words that we can add here to make it this a more balanced document.
But it's based on facts and
well,
data,
then
on what might happen.
Okay. Well, they've made some changes already. There's already quite a few changes that I've already had them make. And I'm just saying there might be look at these other ones too also. That's all. They
how many more?
Three, four.
Okay. Where are they?
Page 38. City of White Salmon. No, yeah. The first bullet. That has been, the annexing there has been added. Okay.
Yeah, and it's a recommendation.
I know, but it was added, okay, right. Based upon comments prior to this. And
right.
I think that's good. I would also, I'd also recommend at the end of that sentence to say, well, maintaining village feel. And they're adding that already in some of the other ones, but why not add it here too?
I got it in there.
Okay. And then I'm also on that page. I would like to see, or I'd recommend that they start with the fourth bullet, which is allow accessory dwellings, ADUs. And all they have to do is, I think I'd like them to put the fourth, fifth, and sixth first. In other words, change 4, 5, and 6 with 1, 2, and 3.
Okay. So put 4, 5, and 6
just a
first,
better way
just move everything down.
Better way to bring us into what we should do rather than just dive into rezoning for R2. All right? I don't know. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, these are just their recommendations. You guys have to take them and do what you want to with them in your comp plan update.
I agree. But you know, the people do
we can have them put 4, 5, and 6 first. That's an easy fix.
Okay. And 39, I'm on 39 here. I would add at the end of that statement, while maintaining village feel.
Which one?
Number five. Oh, consider revisions to residential development.
Okay.
And then the last sentence, okay, so you tell me this. This looks like this is some policy. The last sentence on 39, these and other policy considerations will be discussed and refined based on input from the City of White Salmon and local community stakeholders. Is that something that they've already done, or are they planning to do? What do you think?
I think it should say through the comprehensive plan update process.
Yes.
Should be added. I would say, yes, good.
We'll get, okay, make it clear. Okay, that's good, Jan. That's what I'm thinking too. And then I'd like to make sure that they expand stakeholder input to include long-term residents. There was a little cherry picking on the kind of on the people that they talked to on this. And it wasn't vision statement stuff.
Maybe we should say, instead of calling out a specific type of residence, say local community stakeholders, including a good cross cut of the residential something. So then you make sure that everybody gets called, you know, gets involved in the
state. Well, we will. They're going. Oh, it's easy for them to get the new people. And you guys ought to understand why. And it's hard to get the old farts. And they're the ones that are going to gripe when something changes in their neighborhood. And they've been there for 50 years, okay?
We can put some language in there that makes sure that it gets all residents of the community.
How about balanced cross-section, Jay?
I like that.
Perfect. Thanks, Greg. Good one.
I was thinking, Steve, that the word stakeholders is a generalized term right there. And if people start complaining that they weren't listened, that they didn't have any input, that's usually because they didn't take the time to do it.
Well, yeah, but it's our responsibility to try to get a cross section of people, and I don't believe that you just let everybody else do that. That's not how they handle kids in school now, but at all.
We can make the effort.
That's the exact opposite that they do with kids in school.
Hey guys, can I remind you that we're here right now to talk about whether we want to adopt this? So let's not get off the rails. Let's focus on, just as a quick comment,
in the comprehensive plan process, we can do everything we can to make sure that there's a balanced cross-section of residents participating in the review process and everything. We can't drag them to the table to comment, but we can try to make sure that we get information out to all of our residents, that the comprehensive plan, you know, as we go through the process, there's a process for commenting and participating in the public hearings as we go through that process.
Thank you, Jen. That's exactly what I was trying to get across.
Very good. I think that's it.
And I got all those down, Tom.
All right.
Good girl. Thank you very much, Jan.
You're welcome.
Okay, I share with Greg's sentiment on being able to put this to bed, and I hear your comments, Tom, and I think that I think we just have to rest assured that, you know, changes will be made, but, you know, we got to carry on and really dig into the policy changes. So I'd just like to make it clear that, you know, we're now going to, even though there's been some additional revisions made, that I think I would, you know, and I don't know whether we'd take a vote on this, but I feel like, you know, we all need to be in agreement that we are accepting of the urbanization study as it's currently written and with the proposed changes.
Yeah. Well, I think I believe that Jan will fairly and with a certain amount of effort try to pass these things onto Scott and his people. So Jan, yes. You do what you can on it, and hopefully it'll come out good.
I think it will reflect what you want to see in there.
Yeah, I think they're trying to. I'm just seeing a few things.
Hey, can we go around the table? So one of the things I'm a little frustrated with here is that I'd like to see us get, since this Zoom format is a pain in the ass, sorry, pain in the butt, it'd be really good if we could just get through the bullet pointed things of each person around the table and then move on to the next item. So I don't think we've heard from some of the other people yet.
Seth, do you have any comments in regards to the urbanization study in the draft that we are looking to adopt?
No, I have no specific comments about the language or any wording in it. I think the only thing is that just came up while we were doing this is just to double check page numbering. It was confusing for me to find my way through, and this is the new norm, so it's.
I'll write that down, Seth.
So
I agree. I agree with you, Seth. There's two number fives, for instance.
That's all. Thank you.
Okay, so at this point, Jan, what would be the procedure to bring in a vote?
Well, you might want to see if Greg or Michael have any comments. And then if they don't, you could ask for a motion to adopt the, I think I wrote it down or something. Let me look at my things. motion to accept the White Salmon Urbanization Study, July 2020, with recommended changes.
Got it. Michael, do you have anything?
I have never liked books myself. I don't use them. I would like to see if it's possible for them to change into numbers. That way they can be referenced a lot easier. Given like the conversation that Jan and Stevenson had, Tom had, you know, trying to wiggle into the correct bullet, whereas if they were numbered or lettered, it'd be easy to reference them in either a spoken conversation or written conversation later.
We can see if they can do that.
Okay.
And I don't disagree. Sometimes it is hard to reference which bullet.
Greg, that's my only comment.
And you did a good job, Tom.
No, I don't have any comments.
Okay. With everyone having commented, I'd like to set this out for the White Salmon Urbanization Study approval. Do I have anybody?
I move that we approve the White Salmon Urbanization Study. Mine says July 10, 2020.
Yeah, I think I just left off the date and just said July 2020.
Oh, I gotcha. Of July 2020.
I'll second that.
Wait, you have to say that with corrections and additions.
With additions and what did you call that, Greg?
Corrections and additions.
Corrections and additions. Thank you.
I will second Tom's motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Is that going to be good enough, Jan, for us to move on?
Yeah, I think so. In the future, it would be good to have Erica do a roll call.
Yeah.
And then each person, so that it's clear if someone's just listening to the audio, they can actually hear, you know, Tom Stevenson's name called, and then he says aye, or if he wants to vote against it, when that time comes, he could vote against it.
Okay.
Not to pick on you, Tom.
That's okay.
Okay, so moving on, looks like our second order of business is to proposed amendments to WSMC 17-78 wireless telecommunications towers and facilities. There was a presentation within the agenda packet and some revisions to that.
So I'll make a short presentation here and then open it up to questions and discussion. This came about, these proposed recommendations came about when there was an agenda item before the city council regarding a ground lease option on city property. That item was removed from the agenda, and at this time we will not be speaking to the details of that. Because it could potentially come back before you where you would have to actually make a land use decision. But at that time, the city council requested that some amendments be made to this code. And then it was moved to our city operations committee for consideration. And so staff and the city operations committee and our city attorney, Ken Woodrich, developed the proposed amendments that you have before you. The major amendment is providing a process in our codes about how ground lease options should come before the city council. Because currently there's nothing in our code. And so the city council wanted something in our code that governs how those come to the city council in the future, that they would have to hold a public hearing. And so that's why this new section B has been added, and then it's renumbered. And then the city ops committee on under 1778.025, what was originally C and would become now D number 5. One of the things it states in here is an affidavit shall be submitted attesting to the fact it had a 1/2 mile radius of the proposed tower site. And the city operations committee expanded that to the White Salmon urban exempt area. Because it's not a huge area, but it's a broader area than 1/2 mile, because there are towers located within the urban exempt area. Then the other change is that any appeal of a planning commission decision, instead of going to the city council, it would go to a city hearing examiner. And the city council asked for that to happen instead of coming to them. So those are the proposed changes. We wanted to bring this to the Planning Commission in more of a workshop format prior to scheduling a public hearing, because then ideally the wording that goes out to the public is the wording that you guys want to see go out to the public. And so once you are comfortable with the amendments, we would actually schedule a public hearing before the Planning Commission. And then you would take action on making a recommendation to the City Council to adopt the amendments. And just as some background fact, Tom might remember this original code came about when a cell tower was built within the city limits of White Salmon. And at that time, there were no codes related to it. And so it went up, there was some public outcry, the city council, and my suspicion is the city council without the planning commission probably adopted this code. When we were working with the city operations committee, I reminded them that this is in our land use code, and the planning commission should hold the public hearing and they should be making the recommendation back to the council to adopt it. So I'm trying to keep the city council and the planning commission on track related to things that should be coming to you guys.
Good, Jan. Okay, can you quickly state your three things again?
So the first one, it provides a process whereby ground leases that are associated with a city-owned property, whereby a purveyor of a cell tower is tentatively looking at locating a cell tower on city property, which means he then has to enter into what's called a ground lease with the city, and it would be a ground lease option. So it provides a process about how that comes to the city council. So that is on 1778025B. The second change is it extends the radius that these purveyors are required to do due diligence about trying to co-locate cell towers from a half mile radius to the entire White Salmon urban exempt area. And then the third item is moving appeals of a planning commission decision on the location of any cell tower to from the city council to a hearing examiner.
Okay, so the first two seem to be in the general.
Hey, Tom, can you let Ross run this thing?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, I would go around and get people's input. I'll save myself for last, and I'm just going to go the way it appears on my screen, not playing any favorites. Michael, can we get your comments on this?
Yes, I do. I would like to see any affidavit to cover more than just the urban set-aside area. There's existing towers throughout the gorge. And I think anything, rather than putting it in a residential area here, I want to see if there's other tower owners that could be accommodated by the proposed leasee.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't. What I hear you saying is, rather than looking at the city as the primary option for a cell tower, you'd like to have the lease or vet any grounds outside of the city. Is that what you're explaining, Michael?
Jan?
So I had a little chat with Michael about this, Ross. So currently what it says is that they have to look within a half mile. It got expanded by the recommendation of the committee to the White Salmon urban exempt area. And I believe that Michael Murnald would like to see it broader than that, like the Columbia Gorge from, I don't know, Cascade Locks to the Dalles or something. You do have to realize that there is some relay, you know, so and purveyors, you know, be able to relay between towers to towers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a tower that's in Portland, when they're trying to get cell coverage out here in the gorge, might not work, but he is correct. There are towers on both sides of the river, and there are probably towers outside of the urban exempt area that could possibly be used in a co-location situation.
Okay.
I think, as you were talking, Jan, is that expanded to cover their proposed coverage area. South Tower has a specific coverage area, in other words, to the next tower. So if anything that they had within that area, they should cover, they should address.
They should be doing due diligence. Yeah.
Yes.
So I like that word, proposed coverage area.
Okay. Anything else, Michael, that you would have comments on?
No.
Okay. Okay, moving along, next in line, I have Tom. Tom, do you have any comments that you would like to add to this?
Well, I was just going to mention that it looks like the first two changes that have been adopted, give the people in White Salmon a little more say in the matter, rather than just having it go into a ground lease, and I think that's wise for the city to do. I've heard a lot of people that don't want the thing to happen, and it's going to be very vocal probably, and so it's better for the city not to get themselves behind the eight ball and to go through some reasonable public discussion before something like this takes place. So I'm just waiting to hear what everybody has to say, kind of. I think it's going in the right direction.
Thanks, Tom. Greg, do you have any comments?
I've got a couple of things here. I'll first ask a question of Jan or anybody who actually knows the answer to this. The first sentence there, is the purpose of going to the city council for the ground lease first before we bring it to planning for, is that because the city wants to decide if it's even, if the lease options are even worth it, or otherwise it seems like, well, I guess that's my first question. Why do you want to take it to the city, then back to the planning commission, then back to the city council again?
Well, if it goes to the planning commission, typically what would happen is if the city council wanted to move ahead with a ground lease option, they would make a motion that says subject to planning commission approval. And so if the planning commission denied it, then that's, you know, they have two options: to just drop it or to appeal it, because your decision, you know, it's an appealable decision. If the planning commission was to approve it, then it wouldn't have to come back to the city council. The idea is that, yeah, instead, the amount of work that has to be put in on these cell towers for the application to the Planning Commission is pretty extensive. So we've taken some of that information that we thought was critical for the public to understand and the City Council to understand, just looking at the ground lease. But the city council via a public hearing could say, you know, we're not interested in leasing our property for this tower. And then it would not ever come to you. It would be dead.
Okay.
So the idea is, if they're wanting to use public property, which a lot of tower companies do, they think it's maybe an easier process. I've dealt with it a couple of times down in Bingen. And so that way, if the city council does say yes, then they can go through of developing the full application with all of that additional work. And there's quite a bit of work that they have to do to bring an application before the planning commission. But it does, we wanted to include like the affidavit on the ground lease option. We thought that was important to include in there.
Let me stop you right there, Jen. Let me get on with the rest of my questions. That was the first bit. I think the urban exempt area, if we move down to number 5, which I think ties back into that affidavit thing you were bringing up, we got to remember we're in the, Michael, I think to your point, we are in the Columbia Gorge National Scenic Area, and it's really hard to put anything, it's really hard to put anything anywhere other than a pre-developed, whatever you want to call it, urban zone. And mechanically, hold on. And mechanically, you got to remember that cell towers are still line of sight. Like my house here in the lee of Strawberry Mountain, for a long time we had really crappy cell service. And I could walk around the corner to the Catholic Church and it'd be great. So I want to make sure that we don't tell the cell companies how to do their business or how to technically run their stuff. I think we should, personally, I think that we should keep – I don't care if they've looked in Lyle or anywhere else, like it's do, have they looked at places that might not impact neighborhoods as much is the real question we're trying to answer. So I'm okay with the urban exempt area because I think of the technical and legal restrictions they have outside of the city or of the urban growth boundary or whatever it is.
I think they
can get back around you in a minute. Let me finish my stuff here, please. The last concern I have, Jan, and maybe you can explain it a little bit more, but and I understand why I would understand why the city council doesn't want appeal coming back to it. First of all, where does the hearing who is the hearing examiner? It seems to me that any time that we reject an application, it basically goes from a pseudo-judicial process down to where we've got one person deciding whether or not the appeal should go through, whereas if it went back to city council, despite the extra work, it's a panel of elected officials deciding whether or not our initial rejection was valid versus a single person who's just an arbiter of law at that point. So that I have a concern with that.
So hearing examiners are used by a lot of cities and a lot of counties. Throughout the state of Washington. The city council has actually used a hearings examiner recently on an administrative land use decision that was done administratively. There's an appeal of that decision. Also, one of the main reasons that they wanted to is because of sort of, particularly when it relates to city property, there's already a tainting of going through this ground lease option process of the process, because the city council's already, potentially said, yeah, we think it's a great idea, right? And then they forwarded, they had a public hearing. They said, we think it's a great idea. It gets to the planning commission. And they say, we don't think it's a great idea. We don't think it meets these criteria, and we're going to deny it. So now it's coming back to a city council in that situation where they already tentatively thought it was, to some degree, obviously, a good idea for locating it there. And again, a lot of times planning hearing examiners are used for some more like technical things. This code.
Hey Jan, can I let me just jump in real quick? I don't have any, after hearing all this stuff, I don't really have any issues with amendments from my end. That makes total sense. So let me give up the floor now to the next person in line here. Unless somebody else had more questions about the details of the hearing examiner.
No, thank you, Greg. Let's move on to Seth. Seth, do you have any comments?
A few quick comments. So my first one was in 1778-025, proposed B, part C, why we would have a lesser requirement there than for the D, part 11. It just seems like that would be good information for the city council, and I don't believe would be a big burden to just say we want some renderings rather than just a drawing of it, and that small change.
We can use that language.
Okay, that'd be great. My next comment is closer to the bottom. It is on page 6 of the document. It is 1778.050 illumination. And I think illumination of things like this in a neighborhood is really important. I would recommend putting in some language in there about using dark skies approved lighting. It can be an additional expense, and I think would often be foregone by people putting these in, but I think the neighbors would appreciate it. That would be a recommendation of mine.
Can I ask a question, Seth?
Sure.
As we know, basically, it states that unless the Federal Aviation requires it to be lighted, it is not to be artificially lighted. So the only reason a tower would be lighted is, it says towers shall not be artificially lighted except as specified by the Federal Aviation Administration. I don't believe we have the authority to change FAA requirements.
No, and that would be fine if it's completely unlit. I'm just envisioning a small outbuilding with a halogen light that's a bare bulb just blasting all the neighbors, and they say, this
we
is
for safety. We can add some language in here access. About facilities.
Facility lighting would be great to make sure that it's not intrusive.
Dark sky. Yeah, we can add language about that.
We had lots of outbuildings at the grain elevators for cell towers, and they all had lights on the front of them. So you're right, Seth. That's a good point.
Great. Thank you. And the last comment I have is in 1778, part 70, 070, modification of towers, looking at section A. And from my read of that, they say that a tower that's non-conformant, even if it's completely deconstructed to the ground and rebuilt for whatever reason, it never has to be brought into conformance with this code. And I was just wondering if that's actually the intent. That it seems very loose that they could take it completely down and just rebuild sort of whatever they wanted. So I wanted to check that that's correct, and maybe there would be a change possible there.
I believe that was the original intent. I do think it reads the tower is being modified or demolished and rebuilt for the sole purpose of accommodating telecommunications towers comparable in size. So, it can't be taller, it can't be bigger. It's made to the planning department who would review it.
I just want to make sure that if there's a real opportunity for a tower such as the one that was built in White Salmon that people didn't like, if it was being taken down because they were, building a new building on the lot and they wanted to put it back up again, that they would have to bring it before us and actually bring it into align with what we want in our community. I don't know if that's possible.
You guys can make recommended changes. The city council ultimately will adopt this, but if you think that's something that instead of modifications of existing towers going to just the, planning department, and you want them to come back before the planning commission, we can certainly revise that language and do that. It would require, I think, that you as the whole planning commission would want to further that recommendation. But yes, it could be modified. I mean, this is your opportunity to look at this and see if there's something different you want I do know that some people have commented on that.
I would think myself that if there was one that did not fit the this current code that was being taken down, I would like the opportunity to make sure that it did fit the current code. But I'm open to a discussion about that. That's my last change for the document. I would like to just comment on Michael's comment about going outside the urban exempt area. Whatever we do, I think that we need to put some very definite boundaries on their search, where they're looking, because then I think that makes it easier for us to evaluate, did they do the appropriate search or didn't they? If we just say search the area, then it becomes sort of an arbitration of just what do you think is right? What do I think is right? So I'm in that particular section, I'm a fan of discrete, defendable boundaries. Urban exempt area, mile, half mile, whatever we end up with. That's right. What I think. But I'll leave it to staff to play around with that. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. My turn. So, Greg, your questions hit on my question. So I'm satisfied as well with that. And I see the points. I would support the not narrowing down but expanding is what I hear, the comments being what the area that they've vetted is another option. And that's all that I have for this.
I think that expanding it to the urban area was wise. I'm not against expanding it maybe to Hood River, just because you might get comments that are valuable. And they will see it as well. The top of that hill is a skyline from most of the viewpoints of Hood River. And it's a nice looking hill as it is right now. I think that it would be wise, I don't know if you can make decisions like this, but if this was in a spot like in the city, maybe we could require a small tower. I know a little bit about towers. I've seen and witnessed the creation of towers, and then different companies come and hang their stuff on a tower. And if you're leasing a tower space, you get more money if you get another company on the tower, because you get more money from each guy that is hanging there. So the first person who's building a tower, he's encouraged to build a big one. So if he's especially in a good place, Greg, like you were mentioning. Maybe if it was, you give economic incentives a little bit. Maybe you restrict the size of the tower if it's gonna be on that hill. Or if against some people's wishes, it remains to be on that hill. If it's a small tower, I also know there's a really nice tower in Bend, right next to the, pretty close to the new school, and it looks like a tree. Doesn't look, it looks like a fake tree, but those are things you can do if you require it. If you do that, there may be three or four potential tower sites around here. We don't know. They're not going to tell you. They're just going to tell you which one they want. If, for instance, on the side of Burdoyne or somewhere, that was still in the city limits, they could build a tower. I don't know.
And hey, that goes. Can I reel this in again? I don't mean to cut you off, but we're here to specifically talk about the details of this and what we're going to send to the city council. So maybe if you've got specific language that you want to put in here, let's talk about each one of the type, the specific points that we want to change, and then go around the table again and address each one of those. Is that fair?
Well, I'm not familiar with the language that much, but I would say that I'd encourage restrictions on height and encouragement to make the tower maybe single usage. And I'd restrict the them to make from making a big ass tower on top of that hill somehow through their language. Okay, that's it.
So just a quick reply to that. This is in this case, this is where the instances of having purposes in your code can be really important. And if you look at 1778.015, so you as a planning commission, when you approve this, you can put conditions on it, right? And so one of the things it states in here is to minimize adverse visual impact of towers and telecommunications through careful design, which would include heights, siding, landscape, and innovative camouflaging techniques. So that is also a message to any purveyor who would bring that forward. So I think that language in here, Tom, actually allows the Planning Commission, when you're reviewing these cases for you, to have some flexibility to look at the design that's being proposed and make some requirements if you approve it, require certain things to be done.
Thank you, Jan. That would answer my concerns.
Okay, so it appears everybody has provided their comments. This is slated as a action item. Jan, can you clarify for myself what we are going to be adopting or providing action on?
So the motion is to schedule a public hearing on proposed amendments to White Salmon Municipal Code 1778 with corrections as noted on Wednesday, October 14th, 2020.
Jan, can you read the corrections then? What did we add to this?
So the corrections, as I think I've got them, is on 1778.025. BC is that we want that language to be the same or to include some of the same language as D11. And then the affidavit, whatever the defined area is, and right now I'm hearing mixed reviews. Currently it says White Salmon Urban Exempt Area. If that gets changed, it needs to be changed to both locations. One of the phrases that was brought up was proposed coverage area. I believe Seth used that language. And then to add language on 1778.050 illumination, about lighting of just their, you know, they always have the mechanical buildings that are associated with towers, so their facilities, to make sure that the facility lighting meets dark sky requirements, which we have a code that addresses dark sky.
Perfect.
And then Seth wanted to make a change to 1778.070, modification of existing towers. He would like to see those go to the Planning Commission and not just to the Planning Department. So the Planning Commission would review any modifications and they would make those decisions.
So Ross, do you want to go through with the and touch on each one of those around the table to see what thoughts are? How do you want to manage? Because I think we need some specific language for at least two of those.
Yeah, thank you. I don't have those are not talking points that I have, so I would defer to whoever brought that forth.
I would say, Jan, maybe since you have them written down, why don't we do another round robin? Ross, you can call on us and we'll just go one at a time. I believe there were only four or five, so we should be able to be pretty quick.
I think the only two that were anything of detail, or three, I guess, would be the modification of towers, the lighting, and the area, the affidavit covers. So let's start at the top and go around and talk about the affidavit area first.
Thank you, Greg.
Copy. Michael, let's start with you.
Okay. Greg, when you brought in this the scenic area, I'm assuming that the company was to take the easiest way out. And dealing with the city is probably going to be a lot easier than dealing with the Gorge Commission. And I love that smile. And so that's their problem, not ours. And you know, however we put limits on that. On their area of consideration, you know, I just would like to see it expanded beyond the exempt area.
Can you define what that, can someone propose an explanation to that clearly defines what that area is?
Scenic area, they use visible viewing area. We could use that term as well. And as I'm saying, not to break into you, Mike, but this is about, it'll be short. I mentioned that you could see the top of that mountain from Hood River. And I think it'd be wise maybe to expand to the area for comment to people in Hood River, just because there'd be more information, unless people don't think that's true.
So Tom, just as a quick statement here,
I'll mention it again.
Just as a correction, what we're talking about has nothing to do with the public commenting on this. Anyone can comment during a public hearing on these applications. What we're talking about in area is that the company has to do due diligence and search within whatever the defined area is to determine if they can install or co-locate the facility. Are there opportunities, but maybe for whatever reason, company X says, no, we don't want you to, they document that, or there's a technological constraint, or there's a physical constraint. So that's what we're really talking about. Anyone can come and comment. Somebody from Hood River can come and comment on this, that they don't want to see this tower up. Okay. But we're talking about this affidavit.
Okay, I understand.
And just as a comment, okay, and Tom probably knows this, I don't believe, and I think Greg would agree with me, I don't believe outside of the urban exempt areas, any cell towers would be allowed within the National Scenic Area. I worked for the Gorge Commission for 12 years.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, Greg.
I think Tom hit on it along with the comment I made earlier about how the towers work. I think that the language should be an affidavit, blah, 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 that they've looked for any other potential sites within line of sight of the proposed site, right? Because the cell tower works via line of sight. So if we say, like, if you wanted to plunk this thing here, have you checked everywhere you can see from here? Does that make sense? Because it doesn't necessarily give it like a 5-mile radius, because 5 miles around here could be useless. But if it's line of sight, that's easy to plunk out on a topo map. And we can basically say, what can we see from this spot? Did you check all the areas within line of sight of the existing location or of the proposed location?
Thanks.
So
thanks.
Somebody boil that down more clear than I just.
I think you did. I mean, I think it clearly just, you know, is line of sight of proposed cell tower.
Yeah, maybe the line of sight from the peak of the proposed tower. So, you know, because we could pop a drone in the air and see at 40 feet, what can you see from this point?
Okay. Seth?
I'm nervous that language is getting too specific in telling them how to do their job. I think that in specific, they may be able to see something from their cell tower that you can't see from another spot that you can see from the cell tower. So, I mean, saying that you have to go look over there when they're trying to cover their Greg's house and, you know, you can see, I don't know, the complete opposite direction. So maybe line of sight from the proposed service area. I think that's a very good terminology in just, they know where they're trying to add service. That's what's important to them. And hopefully for Greg, it's his place. And so line of sight from the proposed service area, I would say, rather than the cell tower itself.
That nails it down even better in my mind.
Okay. Now we got through one of those items. I would like to, and raise your hand if you have a comment that you would like to speak to on those three items so we can move forward and make a motion.
Seth, do you want to give us language on the lighting?
Sure. I think it should just have a section for facilities that says facility lighting should meet city code should meet dark skies requirements as required by a city code. I think that would be fine.
We might wordsmith it a little bit, but it will meet the intent.
Yeah.
And Jan, because I have the memory of a gnat, what was the last one?
Last one is 1778-070, modification of existing towers. Should that be moved from review and approval by the planning department to review and approval, you know, using the same process as original towers?
I would just like to clarify the exact thing that I was pointing to and would like to see come back in front of the Planning Commission was they have structures may be modified or demolished and rebuilt without complying with the additional requirements of this chapter. I think that if they are demolished and rebuilt, they should come back before the Planning Commission and be brought up to standard. I think modification is likely to be, I don't know, earthquake modification or something. I don't believe that really needs to come to us. I think that can go to planning, but if it is going to be gone and then going to be there again, I think that it would be good for us to have input on what that looks like.
So having two sections, one that is just truly a modification and then a separate section that relates to the demolishing and rebuilding.
Precisely. Yes.
So modifications would stay at the planning department, demolishing and rebuilding would go to the planning commission.
Yes.
Ross, you want to pull the group?
Yeah. So just so we're all on the same wavelength and I hopefully this is okay. Jan, could you just, you know, summarize what we have put together there and then we could then take a vote based off of your description.
Right, I think Greg maybe was hoping to hear from the planning commissioners about Seth's recommendation related to the demolishing and rebuilding section before we get to that motion.
Okay, copy. Does anybody have a further comment on that item? Seeing none, okay. We will move on.
So the motion would be to schedule a public hearing on proposed amendments as corrected. 1778-025-BC would incorporate language from D11. BE, the structures located within light of sight from proposed service area instead of located within the White Salmon urban area. That would also be reflected in D5. And then on 1778-050 illumination, facilities lighting shall meet City of White Salmon Municipal Code requirements related to dark sky. And then 1778-070, we would split that section into two sections. One where they're just modifying existing towers that would still stay at the Planning Commission level. And then if towers are being demolished and rebuilt, those decisions would come back before the Planning Commission.
Sorry, just to clarify there, that last one, the
modification stays at the Planning Department. Yes.
Okay.
I realized I said it same way. And I believe those were the only corrections to the proposed amendments.
So moved.
Okay.
Can I just qualify Jan's information as a motion?
I'll second.
Good.
Okay. And Erica, could you go around and can we...
So before you do that, Ross, you got to ask for discussion, and then being none, then you move for the vote.
Thank you,
Greg. I know, but this Robert's rules, you got to do it.
Hey, I just want to, yeah, I appreciate that. Yes, discussion. Anybody? All right, nope. Seeing none, and I believe this is what you were referring to earlier, Jan, as far as having Erica go around so we can, through this new meeting format, identify who is yay and who is nay.
That's correct.
All right, so starting with Ross Henry.
Yay.
Seth Gilchrist.
Yay.
Tom Stevenson.
Yay.
Greg Hohensee.
Yay.
And Marco Molnot.
Yay.
Perfect. So it carries 5-0.
All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate everybody's input. And moving on, and discussion items, short-term rental policy discussion. Now, just to kind of take inventory of where we're at, it's 7:01. And I think that this is going to have a lot of discussions. There is also under discussion items update on the comprehensive plan update. Jan, can you give me some insight into is that going to be just you providing us with an update of where things are at, or what is that
discussion? It's just me updating you kind of where things are at right now.
Okay.
And I can kind of maybe group my comments on both of these together, and then you guys can decide how you want to move into it. So we are currently working with our land use consultant. It has been brought to our attention that they feel that there are going to be some cost overruns. And so we are trying to resolve those cost overruns and get the process back on track. We are also hoping to sign a contract for the transportation system plan and the park plan. Hope to do that in October and get those two projects moving forward. In the meantime, the mayor, you guys have wanted to hold to talk policy, and we thought that this is an area. It's been it was a hot topic. It came up in the land use moratorium that the city council put in place. It's talked about a lot, and planning commissioners have talked a little bit about it. And so it was as we're waiting to get maybe back on track with the comprehensive plan, it was an area that is like, you know, here's an opportunity for you guys just to have some a broad discussion and to provide some guidance to staff on the development of possible goals and policies related to short-term rentals that would then get incorporated into the comprehensive plan. I included the city of Hood River's, people have mentioned that one's ordinance in the past. And then I just thought of another tourist town. I thought, well, what is Leavenworth doing? You know, I mean, that's a huge tourist area. And I was somewhat shocked to see what Leavenworth was doing, but I thought I would include it just for your information, because it seemed like a little bit of an outlier when it comes to rentals and tourist community. And then we developed just some bullet points. These are just, you know, some questions for you guys to maybe start mulling over and talking about. Should short-term rentals even be allowed? If they are allowed, how are they classified? Are they a residential use or are they a commercial use? Or are they some kind of hybrid? Where should short-term rentals be allowed? What zones should they be allowed? If classified residential, are short-term rentals allowed in commercial zones? Or maybe with a conditional use permit and vice versa? And should there be a limit on the number of short-term rentals? So I know the Planning Commission has wanted opportunities to have a free-flowing discussion about some of these broader policy areas. And this is your opportunity to tackle short-term rentals. I don't anticipate that you guys will conclude your discussion about this this evening, and that it would likely carry over to a future Planning Commission meeting.
Okay, thank you, Jan. I appreciate that clarity and that insight. And I agree, I think this is going to be like from the 2000 foot level as far as discussions. So I think that we need not focus on the exact details of what STRs may look like in white salmon. I think we need to just look at the big picture and have this first discussion so we can, you know, take this in steps that we can, you know, I think we could end up going around in circles and circles if this discussion starts to really get down to some of the finer points. And I think that we should, Erica, would you have the ability, because I think this once again is going to be one that I know I personally could go on and talk beyond what would be an acceptable time limit. So I'm gonna go and say that each person has 2 minutes. And I'm open for suggestions, Greg, if you have any, as far as how we can, you know, be pointed in our discussion and not start circulating into, you know, a vortex of just, you know.
So I think that's a good idea. My suggestion would be that we go around the table, whatever topic you want to bring up for in your 2 minutes. And then we go back around again for another, and you can decide, is it 2 minutes, is it 5 minutes, to touch on stuff that other people have said. We can then, Jan or Erica, somebody could maybe take get some of this captured that we want to talk about in more focus. Like, what's our goal for the next meeting? Once we blurt all our stuff out, what do we actually want to cover specifically next time we talk about this? So, you know, open, free form, focus, and then goals for next meeting.
Okay, I agree with that. So going around in the order that I have it here on my computer, I will start with Michael. You have the stage and can speak freely about your thoughts on STRs. I think you're muted or you're trying to unmute yourself.
Yeah, I have no comment at this time.
Okay, Tom?
In general, well, first of all, I've been watching Airbnb or short-term rentals in Hood River very closely, just because I'm interested a little bit in kind of what's happening. As you probably both, all you know, is our family has a hotel in Hood River, and I've been working in there for the last 30 years. But none of these comments that I have anything to do with the fact that Airbnb or short-term rentals may be competition to the hotel, because our hotel is virtually full during most of these times. I think it's just my opinion about how I think, and I've seen how Hood River's reacted to it very closely. And we can follow Hood River's history if we want to, but brought down very simply, I believe that short-term rentals erode the housing economy in a small town or any town. It has a tendency to take and it erodes rental, long-term rents as well. All these things are concerns of white salmon. White salmon doesn't want high house prices, and white salmon wants to have rental spots. I think that I can go into why the short-term rental creates higher prices, and basically it's makes a business out of the housing, and people that are moving into a town who don't even live here take advantage and can purchase a property, use it for their own rent for a month, and rent it out the rest of the time. Even people that just want to do this as an income can try to do that. And that's, I think, an antithesis of what we're trying to do in our town. So I'm fairly negative on short-term rentals.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. Your time's up. I'm going to raise my hand when your time is up.
Yes. So when Jan's hand goes up, she's not asking to be, to speak. She's informing us that 2 minutes is up. Thank you. Okay, Greg. You're on mute.
There we go. Mumbling and mute. I'll try. This is a rambling thing here. I think we are a vacation town. There's no escaping that. We're in the Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area. Industries will come and go. Timber industry will come and go. And companies like In Situ will come and go. But that natural beauty will always be here. There's no escaping that at this point. I think that banning short-term rentals will push them underground. They're just going to happen. And then what's going to happen is we're going to have a city staff that's going to be playing whack-a-mole constantly. I run around chasing neighbor complaints. I'd rather see a system in place where we regulate it and tax it, make the rules real clear up front. I think then it also puts the short-term rentals on par with local, bed and breakfasts and hotels like the End of the White Salmon, rather than basically giving people a discount for renting out their house, right? I don't think that we should put a limit on short-term rentals, because I think the market will put a limit on it. This isn't all beachfront property. It's not like every short-term rental here is going to rent out like crazy. I think you'll find that the economy will take care of some of our biggest worries. I'm always concerned about creating regulations for something that we imagine is going to happen as opposed to something we actually see happen. I would be okay with creating some limits on it. Somebody could, in terms of geographic limits, you know, in a zone around downtown, something like that. And I've got 8 or 9 seconds left, and I guess that's it. I'm fairly skeptically pro as long as we do it correctly.
Okay. Thank you, Seth.
Thanks. So I have a couple of things that, you know, what do I want out of the community and what do I want out of short-term rentals? The first couple are things that I see as adverse effects that I've seen in other places, neighborhoods becoming places of commerce. I think this came up in our sole letter comment that came into us. I want to avoid high vacancy rates. These are people who own a house here, occupy it for 1 month of the year, and then don't have anybody in it. The house is just literally empty. That's also a potential problem. Avoid rental stock becoming STR stock. I think that gets into labor housing shortages or just housing shortages in general. But what I do also want to be able to do, and this echoes, I think, a lot of what Greg was saying, is that residents, I think, should be allowed to access the main source of income for our area and the main robust income, and that is tourism. I don't think that we should say, while you're living here, you can't help use that to help pay your mortgage. So I'm in favor of STRs in that I think that they are a way for people to earn additional income when we are living in a time where things are always quite stretched. I do have some specific ideas for these things. One of them, proactive taxing. I think that that is a very good idea to keep the market in balance. There are lots of ideas about primary residence only, time limit caps, 90 days per year, those kinds of things. However, there are indications that a time limit cap does end up with lots of vacant housing where you have it's rented out like crazy in the summer and then it's just empty the rest of the year. So that's also possible as well. I think that there's a lot of different ways that we could manage keeping the short-term rental stock where we want it, but I think banning it outright would be a disservice to our community. Thanks.
Thanks, Seth. I'll now take my 2 minutes. I within my profession, have, I think, a lens that a lot of people don't. And also have relationships with other professionals that have been heavily involved with Hood River's STR and that, how that rolled out. I don't want to use up this time to get into all those details, but I think we do have to recognize that Hood River really grappled with this, and it's now our turn. And I think that we can utilize what Hood River's process has been. And I would really like to, I would like all my decisions, if possible, to be based off fact and not speculation. And I know I hear that as a concern. And I think if we can figure out what our actual numbers are as far as current STRs, that's going to help us make an informed decision. I think, I mean, as far as we're a tourism town and you just got to, you know, face the facts, I think that we should look at what our numbers are in relation. I mean, as I understand it, tech and ag are our two primary revenue sources, and tourism is just a small blimp on the map. So I think we got to be careful to maybe not... to just believe because it's what we see that you know, these tourism dollars is keeping the restaurants open and alive, and would like to have some input from them. I would propose that we look at beyond Hood River, Cannon Beach, I think has a I recognize that, I'll finish up here, has a cap. So rather than having it be a primary residence and go the way of Hood River, looking at some other tourism towns that cap the number, figure out what the sweet spot is, and then have a lottery system every 2 years. So I'd like to propose that, and with that, I would like to now transfer. So I think we just had some good, just open-ended discussion on it. And now would like to get, Greg, can you help me out? So you would,
I'd say just go right back around the room and now that we've all said something, maybe Michael or Tom or, you know, maybe somebody, I know I have a couple notes written down. So I just go right around the room again and see if anybody has any other ideas before we go into the planning for the next meeting bit.
Yeah. Okay. I agree with that. So Michael, with the discussions you've heard, do you now have any comments on STRs?
Or what's no, concerned? I don't.
Okay. And Tom?
I think that there's was some good points that were made. I'd like us to remember that we're concerned about long-term rentals for people in white salmon. And when we're talking about maybe having ADUs go into the city, the best way you can pay for an ADU is to put an apartment on it and do a short-term rental. But the best thing for the city might be you can do an ADU and do a long-term rent and keep the people in this. If we're looking for rentals, that's a good spot for it. I think that the city is better to consider their residents rather than tourists. I may be a little more old-fashioned than the rest of you. I understand the position. You know, and then certainly if we wanted to do some, you should at least restrict it to a number. And I thought that lottery thing you were making is pretty interesting, Ross. The one thing too that can happen is just through attrition, the short-term rental may or may not last as well as it always has been right now. And I mean, I have second houses and different rentals, and I don't do a short-term rental. I do long-term rentals, and so I just believe in it. And I'll reiterate, that's what our concern is, and we're trying to, you know, move the world to try to figure out a way to have place space for people to rent new spaces. Well, if you didn't have the short-term rentals, you'd have those new spaces right away. So just be careful. And you certainly shouldn't allow it to just happen and proliferate completely, because then you get a whipsaw effect, okay?
All right, Greg?
I want to say that, like, my concern is not just for people who want to rent here, but also for property owners. And I think you mentioned it probably more eloquently than I can right now, that we want to make sure that if, you know, there is this potential for income for property owners who want to go through it, a legal and well-regulated way. Just again, spitballing, and maybe this comes to our next stage, which is how do we put some ideas on paper and see, you know, what we like. But maybe it's the primary residences are only open to are the lottery or whatever, so that we're making sure we keep those larger homes ready for rentals. But things like ADUs or mother-in-law apartments, things like that, that are, or even a spare bedroom in the house, right? Because somebody could be rent at four, three. Anyways, you get the idea what I'm talking about. maybe there's a way for the permitting system to allow for both landowners to take advantage of the tourism dollars and to make sure that we keep housing available for the workforce in the community. I think that we could work that out where it wouldn't be a free-for-all. And I don't think it'll be a free-for-all just because, like Tom said, it's a pain in the butt having short-term renters. Most people won't like it. So there you go. There's my thoughts.
All right, Seth.
You're muted, Seth.
Thank you. I wanted to just discuss quickly or point out the idea of an ADU being something that would replace long-term housing stock or suffices long-term housing stock. I believe that those work for a very, very thin slice of people looking for housing. The family housing stock that we lost, for example, in the mobile home park, I don't believe, you know, many of those full families living in the mobile homes would be welcome on somebody's property. And, you know, a whole host of five people plus living in this 800 square foot ADU, it's just not the kind of housing that we need. And I think that an ADU as an STR is actually a way to make it financially viable for families to be able to afford to buy houses in White Salmon and be able to live here. So, you know, I think that there are two sides to that, two edges to that sword. And I think that we do need to consider both of those for sure. I think that's the only additional point that I wanted to bring up. So thank you.
Okay. One thing I would like to point out, and this is, you know, once again tied to my profession, is since Hood River has adopted their STR policy, we are seeing a lot of buyers coming into our market that are looking at, you know, are buying up housing stock for STRs. And this was an example of when Hood River was going through their policy, you know, someone who was in favor of not regulating STRs was very excited about it because they could come down here and buy three houses and make a profit out of that. I think we really do have to, you know, ensure that we are not, you know, that our, whatever we adopt keeps just real focus on the people that live here and meeting their desires and their needs and having that be the focus. The other thing that I would like to add is a lot of the folks that I help move here are moving here for tax purposes. And so can you guys hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, it just wasn't lit up. I think people are moving here for tax purposes. And so there are, you know, I think having somebody have a primary, you know, with Hood River's model, there'd be ways to game, to kind of game the system to, you know, that would then require, you know, staff or however that comes about to monitor that where, you know, going back to, you know, a cap scenario that, you know, it just says, okay, these are the people that can, you know, that have met the qualifications. The last thing that I would add is that, you know, from a real estate standpoint, having some sort of unity or synergy with our neighbors across the river, I think is important. I you know, I don't think that we have to necessarily match 100% what they've set forth. I think we're a different community than they are, but to go in a completely different direction, I think could be, you know, could be problematic. With that being said, it's 7:26. I think that our next round robin talk should be discussion items for our next meeting and what we're going to be asking of the commission members to really you know, think about and things that we can start to drill down and get to more detail. So I would like to pass the mic around to everyone to make their proposals of what we would like to tackle in our next meeting in discussing STRs. Michael, you're up first.
Nothing for me.
Tom?
Well, I thank Greg for having a good idea of how to handle this a little bit. And I think we went through two levels and we can come into a third and just kind of continue in a similar fashion is probably pretty good. You know, how to start enacting it a little bit. I'd like to do a little more research on the Hood River zone and on AD or STRs in Leavenworth, so I'd be a little bit more prepared.
Okay, Greg.
I'm lazy. I think that I like your idea of having some synergy with the neighboring areas. One possible way to do this without reinventing the wheel is we could all annotate the Hood River code and what we like, what we don't like. We could send those independently, not a group email. We could send those independently to staff. Staff could then put our notes, all five of our notes in there. And if there's anything obviously that's not in that code, we can have it there at the end or somewhere appropriate. But even if it's just scratched or written neatly on a paper copy and dropped off at City Hall, then before the next meeting, we could all be taking a look at, you know, if you think the whole thing's garbage, write garbage on the top and hand it on. Or if you have specific ideas you get what I'm saying. I don't need to talk anymore. How does that sound?
Do some homework, do some notes, have the notes compiled and sent to us before the next meeting. Is that it?
Yeah. And so the only thing I'd throw in there, a deadline, Erica, Jan, when would you want that stuff sent to you by so that it could be compiled for the next meeting so that I can work to a deadline?
So I think it would be helpful if we just did, so you typically, you have two meeting opportunities in a month. We'll do the public hearing on the cell phone tower on October 14th. And then to allow a much better and longer and lengthier discussion, we could have this discussion at your October 28th meeting. And then hopefully by then, we'll also be maybe looking at some elements, the basic elements. They're not the really nitty gritty elements of the comp plan at that meeting. And so I think it would be good to have this information back no later than October 14th.
Okay. Are we going to talk about this at the October 14th meeting, or is it?
It would be at the October 28th meeting, Tom.
Okay, I gotcha.
And then that gives you guys time to do some research, to delve into what I'll try to do is get the Cannon Beach code, and I'll send that out tomorrow. That was referenced by somebody. I'll try to pull that off of their website.
And I know Manzanita and Pacific City handle things very differently. Manzanita also has a limit. Pacific City does not. So if anyone else is interested in looking independently, those two things we're looking at.
Yeah, Pacific City is guided by the county.
I want to mention that White Salmon doesn't have many hotel rooms, and that's unique to some of the cities that you're going to be looking at. So maybe we should concentrate on what some town did, which was like us, who don't have hotels. Manzanita is one of those, I think, maybe, Greg. Do you know what they've got around there?
Yeah, I don't think there's any hotel within. There might be some bed and breakfast, but it's all basically rental houses.
Yeah, it might be better for us to talk about, you know, apples and apples a little bit, and size and style of housing.
All right, Seth, do you have any comments as it relates to paving a path for our next meeting?
Yeah, I anything that the staff was planning on using in their work, I'd be interested in knowing, you know, if there's any data. One thing that I saw in the land use study, for example, was the 580 units added 1990 to 2018 with only 344 year-round dwellings. Those kinds of things, I was like, oh, that's actually really interesting for this STR discussion. And I thought maybe there were other documents that might have data like that. I don't want to throw a bunch of work at you guys, but you know what's in our library, and you might have, or maybe even just documents you can send around to us to look through.
Yeah, I think just to reply to that, that's probably the most challenging thing. And I think Ross and Greg spoke to this, that it's, you know, we're having to speak anecdotally to some of these issues because we don't have qualifiers. So I think Ross stated something that definitely, as we work with our utility billing, the pandemic did not slow housing sales. It may have slowed down housing starts, but housing sales and White Salmon have not slowed down by any means. But what's been interesting is, I would say at least 50% and probably greater, most of those people are not living here year round that are buying these homes. Some people are, but I would say it's probably 50 to 60, 70% of the people that are buying them. You know, investments tanked, and I think people are pulling their investment money out and buying land and housing. And Ross probably knows more about that than I do because he's a realtor, but we're definitely seeing that trend. To actually quantify, you know, COVID-19 really put a hamper on, you know, working with our short-term renters and getting them registered. However, we can task some staff just to go through Airbnb and identify how many homes currently are listed on Airbnb or VRBO, and there's a couple of other sites. So you kind of have to go through and make sure you're not double counting. But I think it's increased. I don't think it's decreased. And those are just the ones that are on those sites. Some people manage their own. Some of them is I think Greg said, are underground already for whatever reason. Maybe they're not legally built or whatever. So they tend to be a little sneakier. But yeah, it's a challenging area for us right now, Seth, to really grasp what those numbers are.
All I'm asking is that I know if there are other documents that are like this White Salmon urban land use study that we may not know about, you know, even just passing them on to us so that we can look through them. Cause I saw those numbers. I thought they were relevant. Yeah. And the last thing I'll say is that as part of your homework, everybody, there was an Outside Magazine article called "Did Airbnb Kill the Mountain Town?" which I thought was, I read and I thought was very good discussion. It's a couple of years old, but it talks about policies that have been done all through different mountain towns in Colorado. And I think a lot of them fit. Crested Butte was actually where they started the discussion, but they went to other places.
That's just a pure guess of mine.
Yeah.
From what I know.
Yeah, Crested Butte, Gunnison, they mentioned they go all over the place. So, but it's a good article.
I'll be forwarding you an article that the mayor has asked me to forward to you about STRs also.
Yeah, so I would, you know, in my time to, you know, comment as far as our next meeting, yes, I think if there's some data points that could be calculated for the current numbers. I will do some digging around and asking what, you know, we have such a small market with such a small inventory with such a high demand. Try to get a pulse if, you know, what I'm being told, which is, you know, upwards of 3/4 of our buyers are coming into our market and looking to STR, you know, is that number accurate? So I'll try to quantify that. And then just one, going back, one comment that I'd like to make and, you know, have it be under, at least, you know, talked about is, you know, always talking about the affordability of white salmon and what can we do to make that happen. I think that my personal opinion is that ship has sailed. And so if we were just to eliminate all STRs, that's not going to lower our home values to make them affordable. And, you know, as it was told to me, you know, this is just one, you know, us having a conversation and making some possible regulations to our STRs is just one arrow. And I think really where the impact is going to happen, depending on what direction we go, is long-term rentals and having that as a housing stock out there. And so, and then lastly, I think we just keep in mind that, yes, we're all white salmon residents, and, you know, we have the ability to think, but I think we also need to go around to the stakeholders and gather as much insight from our neighbors, from our city, from the people here, and have our comments be broader than just, you know, what we feel, and bring that back to our next meeting. I don't have any specific, you know, say, you know, somebody go to the local businesses downtown, or someone go to, you know, I think we can just, you know, go in whatever direction you feel, but, you know, come back to our next meeting and, you know, beyond your own personal comments and your own personal research, you know, add in some commentary from people you've talked to.
So I know we can't ask for content in the paper, but I'm sure that, I know there's regularly an update about this. Are you inviting public comment about STRs? Do you want people in the community to be asked to send their ideas in?
I don't
there's
think
there's going to be there's a stage in this process for that, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I don't think that this is, I'm not proposing that this is a time to do that. I'm proposing that we all have our, you know, I think we have a good balance amongst our commissioners as far as our circles of people we know in the community. And I think that's my proposal is, you know, look to, and try not to get into, you know, echo chamber of what you believe and step out and just be able to have some critical conversations like we're having with people in our community. So as we move forward, you know, we're not stuck in a vacuum.
Ross, one of the things I think would be really good for planning commissioners to think about, I you guys are doing great. I think it's a great conversation, but is to also, you know, kind of focus on that, like where do we allow short-term rentals? I mean, I've certainly heard, and we heard from somebody, you know, tonight, that our standard R1 neighborhoods, particularly, you know, because, you know, people nowadays, if they can, they'll build an ADU and they'll use it for short-term rental. And it's certainly, you know, good income. It helps them pay the mortgage on the rest of their place. But the comments I've received have been, it starts to make the neighborhood no longer a single family neighborhood. it's an R2 neighborhood all of a sudden, because now you've got all these ADUs, two dwelling units, yes, one of them small, on a property in an R1 zone. I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm just saying these are the comments that we're receiving, and you know, not having, you know, the idea of a single family neighborhood is, you know, everybody knows everybody, and so then all of a sudden you have, you know, people coming in and out all hours of the night. We had a lot of complaints about short-term rentals in certain locations here this spring. You know, and again, part of that is absentee property owners. The one we had the most complaints about, that the guy lives back east and he has no clue about how his renters slam doors all night. I think, you know, getting out there and talking to people maybe in a traditional R1 neighborhood would be helpful to understand how those people feel about accessory dwelling units and if they're being used for short-term rentals. You know, it's one thing to have an accessory dwelling unit and have your mom and dad living there, right? Or maybe even your college student living there in the pandemic while they're zooming in to go to school, whatever. You know, but it's different than to have, you know, every weekend there's a whole different group of people, you know, into the neighborhood. So I think, you know, those ideas about where do we locate, or do we care?
Yeah, and I think that, Jan, I think that also was in our agenda packet as mm-hmm. some proposed talking points. So if, you know, beyond making some comments to what Hood River's policy is, if you'd like to also include comments to that, that would be good. And I think we can just start to, I think we are also at a unique opportunity to both tackle ADUs and STRs, which sound like most people believe that those two interact together. I agree. And I think that, how those two, I think we have STRs on our plate and I think we have ADUs, and starting to formulate some ideas of how those interact. Okay, so I would like to end the discussion of short-term STRs and move on to the update on the comprehensive plan process.
I sort of already gave that, Ross.
No, I know you did. I'm just, yeah. Can you just?
I'll re-summarize. So we're working with the consultant to iron out some cost overruns. Once we've done that, then we'll get back on track. I anticipate that we will be bringing some of the comprehensive plan elements to the Planning Commission after October 28th meeting. If we get things ironed out, we might even bring one or two of them at the October 14th meeting, but I think it'll most likely be the October 28th meeting. And so you'll see some of those draft languages. They'll have some draft goals and policies in them. And then, you know, that'll allow for you guys to take a look at those. Are those policies, goals and policies, what you want to move forward with? Are there suggested, recommended changes? These are some of the smaller, simpler elements. They might be easier. I don't know. They might be easy to go through, but we're not going to bring like a whole bunch of them. But I think starting with the 28th, definitely, you know, every meeting you'll be delving into some policy discussions. I think as we move through this, there may be some of these broader policy discussions. I think the short-term rental one we knew is a big one. And I think I'm glad, Ross, you brought up the ADUs, or maybe I did. They don't always go hand in hand, but, you know, there has been some discussion about where ADUs should go or shouldn't go. And so I think we're getting back on track. At some point, hopefully we will be able to have the Planning Commission and staff in person, and we'll do what's called a hybrid meeting where the audience will attend by Zoom, but staff and planning commissioners will be able to meet in person, socially distanced. But we're not there yet. I don't know when the governor is going to release that and how we're going to get that set up, but we'll figure it out just like we figured out how to do these Zoom meetings. Right, Tom?
That's right. Thank you.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we're at. I think, we'll, once we get the things ironed out, we'll send out a new schedule for the comprehensive plan update process that will calendar out kind of where we go from here to propose, to you guys making a recommendation to the city council for adoption of a comprehensive plan update.
Okay, thank you. And I would just, in closing, would like to just, let all the other commissioners know if you have something that you would like to bring forth as it relates to either STRs, primarily STRs, because that's, or the comprehensive plan, feel free to email me and then I can look to direct that, or I believe it's also, possible just to go to the city, but I open my email to communication within the guidelines of what we're allowed to communicate.
Yeah, it's best not to have a discussion via email. So the best thing to do per Ken Woodrich's recommendations is to send those comments to staff, and then we can group them all together and then send them out as staff communication to the Planning Commission. We don't want to start a round robin discussion.
No, yeah, absolutely not. And that's not what I'm proposing. I'm proposing if one individual has, something, between now and then comes up, like either send it to me or send it to the city. I'm not proposing a group.
Yeah, sounds good.
Email chain. So, all right. Are we clear to adjourn this meeting?
I think so.
Okay. No formal.
You don't need to do a motion to adjourn.
Okay. Everybody have a good night. Thank you.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Good to talk to all of you.